Turns out economic crises have economic cycles as well. From American Public Media, this is Market Class. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday today, the 11th day of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. This whole thing started, if you remember, I mean, yes, it started with the virus, but we got the first inkling of our looming economic calamity back in the middle of February when Apple said it wasn't going to be able to get products from its China supply chain. It was a supply shock, not enough stuff for people to buy. That turned into, as we all know, a demand shock when we all went into quarantine, not enough people to buy all the stuff. And the reopening that's happening in some places is a try at getting that demand going again. Apple's going to open some of its stores this week. Starbucks and Macy's have already started. There's a bunch of things going on. But just because consumers can go back doesn't mean they're gonna. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra gets us going with Demand Shock Part 2.
Yesterday, Colin Adams' wife went to Cracker Barrel, the restaurant country store chain, to pick up some takeout.
My wife said it was absolutely packed. You know, people were there celebrating Mother's Day, and the only people she saw wearing masks were the employees.
Adams, who lives in Tennessee, says the idea of sitting down at a restaurant right now fills him with existential dread. Also, he's a pastor.
You know, if someone gets super sick, I might have to go see someone who's in their 80s or, you know, 90s, or I have a woman who's 103, and the risk just isn't worth going out for.
This morning, I asked people on Twitter, are you going back to restaurants or stores? Almost everyone said not just no, but absolutely not.
It just doesn't seem safe yet, even if people stay far apart.
James Smith lives in Phoenix and has seen what the virus can do. His colleague was hospitalized with it. His sister has it.
The symptoms are atrocious, Marielle. I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Sharice Johnson lives in Mississippi.
To sit in a place for an extended period of time and like close quarters with other people, not interested right now.
Another response? I wouldn't go out to stores or restaurants if you paid me a big fat bonus. Even some folks who go to stores are conflicted about it. Dana Franks lives in Nashville and stopped by Macy's this weekend to buy some makeup. She felt pretty safe, but also kind of guilty.
It's a very weird feeling, like I shouldn't be there. There's a lot of that feeling right now.
Of course, if places are packed, that means a lot of people are going out. But there's clearly a divide with a strong contingent of people who do not feel ready. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Demand, of course, comes in many forms. It's not just all consumers. The Department of Agriculture is going to buy more than $1 billion worth of meat and dairy and produce from farmers this week. It's part of a program called Farmers to Families Food Box, which aims to help the growing number of Americans in need. But is that program going to help farmers? Marketplace's Jasmine Garst has that one.
William Teeley's family works on a dairy farm in West Pennsylvania. With many schools and restaurants closed, the company they sell milk to told them, you got to slash production by 15%.
They told us you have to get rid of the milk somehow, some way.
Teeley says in the 152 years his family has owned this farm, this is the first time they've had to dump milk. The irony is it comes at a time when 44% of Americans over 18 are afraid they will not be able to afford food. That's according to a recent poll by Marketplace Edison. Professor Daniel Sumner from UC Davis says the Farmers to Family Food Box program aims to assist those who might not be covered by other programs like food stamps.
They're homeless or they're not eligible in certain ways. And one of the attempts here is to get food to the poorest, most vulnerable people.
But will it help farmers? Professor Andrew Novakovich from Cornell says it depends what they produce.
The only thing that USDA will subsidize in these boxes is dairy products, fresh fruits and vegetables, and canned pork and chicken.
Stuff that can go easily from farm to box to nonprofit to a family in need. Some farmers will be out of luck.
If you're, you know, beef, for example, or eggs, you're not represented in that.
Teeley got some good news this morning, though. The company he sells milk to was selected to participate in the Family Food Box program, which means he might be able to sell it more of his milk. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
For all of the hints of reopening and maybe some increased demand, there was not a whole lot of demand on Wall Street. Today we'll have the details when we do the numbers.
Music.
Even with everything that's been going on, I'm sure some of you took time yesterday to recognize and remember the mothers in your life. Maybe you bought some flowers or got some yourself, because the second weekend in May waits for no pandemic, you know. Christina Stemble runs a direct-to-consumer bouquet company. It's called Farm Girl Flowers, and we had her on the program a couple of weeks ago talking about not being able to get a paycheck protection loan in the first round of that program. So with the big flower holiday now safely in the rearview mirror, we got her back on the phone to see how it went. Christina, good to talk to you again.
So happy to be here.
Here we are on the far side of Mother's Day. How did it go? You were a little worried.
I was a little worried. It went really, really well. I feel like a huge burden has been lifted. So there was a lot of unknowns, but it all went well, and all the planes took off and all the trucks left and delivered, you know, thousands and thousands of bouquets to happy moms.
Did you ever get the PPP loan that we talked about the first time, or did you do this sort of on a wing and a prayer for Mother's Day?
Both. So wing and a prayer, definitely. We did find out last week, it was a big week all the way around, that the SBA did approve our loan application, one of the 21 that we filled out. And while we don't
have the 21 application, you applied 21 times?
Yeah, I applied 21 times. We were told we should only apply once, but that didn't work the first time around. So I didn't want to take any chances on the second one. So yeah, I spent hundreds of hours applying, and one of them came through. We don't have the money yet, but we're told that it was approved. So we're hoping it does come through. And then we're also still trying to be really vocal about it, though, to help all of the small businesses that haven't received it.
When you talk to, and I don't know, you know, who your peers are in the flower world, but I imagine you're plugged in entrepreneur-wise to a bunch of people. What do they say about this PPP experience for them?
Yeah, sadly, they've had very similar experiences to us. It's really hard, though, because, I mean, like I said, I spent probably 200 hours just researching who I could apply with and then applying through very, like, untechnologically savvy, you know, websites where it would time out and you were halfway through and everyone wanted different, you know, the forms in different formats, like, you know, quarterly versus monthly IRS 941 forms and stuff like that. And a lot of the CEOs I talked to were just like, why am I going to waste this much time when I'm trying to stay afloat and working 20 hours a day as it is? You know, I still thought it was well worth the time and tried to encourage everybody to still go for it. Because, you know, we have a very uncertain economy looming before us right now.
When the first time we spoke, you were pretty clear. You think that this program, I guess we were still in the first slice. I can't even remember if it was first slice or second slice of this PPP program. But you were pretty clear that it had failed. Do you still think so?
Absolutely. I definitely think it's failed all the way around. And I also think, you know, from the standpoint of how we executed it, the no parameters basically put around it. So anybody could apply for it even if they didn't need it. And then the banks giving priority to customers that they have better relationships with, and then CEOs taking the money when they don't need it. And so my intention is not to get it forgiven, because I'm hoping we won't need it that way, but to use it as a loan and pay it back. And so, you know, I think that there just needs to be a lot more, not only stipulations on how it's being executed, but then transparency on who's taken it and whether they paid it back or not.
Last time we talked, you said that Mother's Day is it for you, right? If you can't make it through Mother's Day, then you're doomed. You have made it through Mother's Day. Is this going to carry you through the fallow season in flowers, as it were, and until the next time you get a bump?
Hopefully. So we are, we had a good May, really good Mother's Day May so far. However, you know, just not knowing what the economy is going to look like and if there's a recession, you know, on the horizon, we're all going to be kind of just at the mercy of what that looks like every business wise. And we're no exception. So I'm excited that we were able to get the PPP, or hopefully you're going to get the PPP loan, just to have as a security net, because companies like us that have no bank loans and can't get a bank loan, this is the thing that might be able to take us through if the economy does decline considerably.
Christina Stemble, she is the CEO and founder of a company called Farm Girl Flowers. Christina, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kai, for having me.
The terrible reality of the April unemployment report that we got this past Friday is going to be with us for a while. But there was a sliver of hope in all the doom and the gloom. 78% of the people who said they were out of work reported that they had been temporarily laid off. The big question then is how confident they ought to feel about going back to the jobs that they lost. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has been looking into worker confidence and economic reality.
Not long before stay-at-home orders went into place, Savannah Jordan started a dream job as a guest relations manager at a new upscale restaurant in Scottsdale, Arizona. 3 days before the restaurant's grand opening, she was furloughed.
I was upset only because I was so excited to open up the restaurant and get started.
She's collecting unemployment, but she loves her job, and that's why she's not looking for a new one. Also, she's seeing states start to open up.
I'm in full confidence that we will open up soon, and once we do, we're going to be extremely busy.
A recent poll by the Associated Press and the University of Chicago says of people in households where someone has been laid off, 78% think they'll go back to their jobs. Matt Nodowadigdo at Northwestern University thinks that's a little optimistic, but not far from the reality, at least for now.
Every month that you say you're on layoff temporarily, there's some chance that that becomes permanent.
He says some industries will have an easier time rehiring, like healthcare and construction, jobs that are public necessities or where it's easier to follow social distancing rules. Dean Baker at the Center for Economic Policy and Research says restaurants and tourism will be shakier, but they may need to bring people back to take on slightly different jobs.
Part of the story is they're going to need people to pursue the social distancing.
In the meantime, Baker says the confidence furloughed workers are showing is good. It's what could actually save us from a longer downturn. When people believe they still have jobs waiting for them, they continue to spend money. And that keeps the economy going. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Well, I learned it's a big mess.
The market for masks, straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 109 today. That's in points, 0.4%, 24,221. The NASDAQ, though, up 71 points, about 0.7%, 91.92 there. The S&P 500, basically flat, 29.30. Marriott, down 5.5% today after its earnings report, earned less per share than expected because, of course. But it said business was improving in China and stabilizing in the rest of the world. The car retailer AutoNation revved up 2.7% today, posted better than expected revenue for the quarter. The company also said sales rose in the last 10 days of April. Under Armour down 9.3% today. The maker of athletic apparel said revenues declined 23% for the quarter. Apparently relies heavily on retailers like Macy's and The Gap, and it said the pace and timing of store reopenings remains highly uncertain. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Homeowners and renters in a lot of cities and states are protected right now from foreclosure and eviction. But the same crisis that made those protections necessary has also made it harder for people dealing with substandard living conditions or illegal evictions to get help. That's only added to the housing crisis that we had before this whole thing started, of course. The Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation has a weekend program, has for 40 years, in fact, had such a program that pairs low-income residents with top local attorneys, one of a bunch of pro bono housing assistance programs across this country. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports now on what the battle for better housing looks like when you factor in a global pandemic.
It's Saturday morning, but Michael Arndt still dresses for work in a button-down shirt and blazer.
If you come in and you've never met a lawyer before and he says, you know, Saturday is my day off, so here's my favorite yard mowing shirt and shorts, that kind of gives the wrong impression.
Arndt is a lawyer with Hawkins, Parnell & Young in Atlanta, and normally he defends corporations in product liability suits. But today, he's donating his time to the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation and meeting with a potential client, yes, on Zoom. Do we even need to say that anymore? A staff attorney from the foundation is also on the call.
Good morning, Ms. Jones.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're well. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. Thanks.
Turns out Arndt's jacket wasn't necessary. Elisa Jones, the client, has dialed in by phone. Arndt begins.
I am not your attorney. I'm just here to facilitate the process, and hopefully we can find someone that can help you with your case if it's one where legal action is appropriate. Does that all sound good?
Yes, sir, it does. Thanks.
And any questions?
Jones tells Arndt that last October, she'd found a house to rent using a Section 8 voucher, a federal subsidy for low-income renters. She'd done all the paperwork and begun moving in her stuff when, without warning, she showed up.
And as I approached, the doors were locked. I couldn't get in at all.
Apparently, the landlord had changed her mind.
So not only did she take my money and run with it, she threw my kids' things away, and I still haven't heard to this day from her.
Jones didn't just lose her $500. She had a deadline to use her housing voucher. When the landlord backed out, she lost that too.
I stayed in my car, stayed in hotels. I was homeless for a while.
Back then, she was working as a delivery driver for Amazon. Eventually, a coworker let her stay at her place. But Jones couldn't bring her four teenage sons.
Me and my family had to scatter. All of my boys, we're scattered now. It hurts so bad.
Arndt mostly listens. For a lot of clients, this is their first chance to really be heard. Then he gives Jones some options. She can send a demand letter to the landlord seeking damages. And if that fails, she can take her to court. This is when what's already hard gets harder. The courts are closed, at least through mid-June.
And even when the emergency is lifted, there's going to be a backlog.
And then there's the lack of connection.
There's just a lot of benefit to walking with them to the coffee room and then walking back, and just kind of gestures and all those things that kind of come from meeting in person, I think, are lost via Zoom.
Elisa Jones is also worried about something being lost.
I just hope that it didn't block anything from them seeing that I'm just not a lazy person and all the information and documents that I'm presenting is worthy of their time. And maybe they didn't feel the vibe or something.
Actually, this is where technology can help. Erica Taylor is director of the Saturday Lawyer Program. She says they've had fewer no-shows because clients can connect from anywhere, and video can help lawyers get the full picture. Taylor points to one woman who complained about cracks in the wall and ceiling.
But then she stood up and she showed them, and I was able to look at it, and I went, okay, that is not just a little crack. Those are huge holes. And we wouldn't have been able to fully understand that if she hadn't been able to actually show them this is what I'm talking about.
Still, precarious living conditions are going to get even worse as the economy deteriorates and more people have trouble paying their rent. Right now, legal evictions are on hold in Georgia, but Taylor says that hasn't stopped illegal tactics like turning off the power or changing the locks. And once the restrictions lift,
we are deeply concerned and we're basically bracing right now for what we expect is going to be a deluge of filings.
As for Elisa Jones, the foundation decided to take her case. But since her eviction, she had a car accident on the job and can no longer work. She applied for workman's comp along with unemployment. She's still waiting. Her federal relief check hasn't come either. She did manage to find a cheap apartment, only now she doesn't know how she'll pay this month's rent, leaving her vulnerable to eviction again. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
You've probably seen by now a story or 10 about a state or federal government agency agreeing to pay millions and millions of dollars for masks and protective equipment. Masks and protective equipment that sometimes never materialize. ProPublica had what you can legitimately call a wild story along these lines the other day. David McSwain wrote it, a tale of 36 hours during which a deal for masks for the Department of Veterans Affairs basically disintegrated in the wild, wild west that is the PPE market right now. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I guess I need you to tell me, first of all, about this guy, Robert Stewart Jr., and his company, Federal Government Experts. Who is he, and how did you get turned on to this story?
I actually came to notice this company. I was just sort of poking around federal contracting data, trying to figure out, you know, who's being hired to get, you know, these masks we keep hearing about. And plugged him in and saw that the VA gave him a nearly $35 million deal and wanted to find out who he was and found this company hadn't been around very long. It was their first contract and, you know, he had promised to deliver 6 million masks. So I just called him up and said, you know, I'm a reporter. I'm curious to know how you got this deal and how you're procuring these masks. He says, you know, I'm flying out to Chicago tomorrow. We've got a private jet. Come along. And we were supposed to go to the VA to see masks deliver. That's not ultimately what happened.
You wind up spending, I think it's like overnight or something, in a Hilton hotel lobby in Chicago while Stewart tries to salvage his deal. And I'm not going to spoil it too much because people really ought to read this story. But I want to back out for a minute here and ask you what you learned about, I'm not going to call it a black market, but about the interestingly configured market for a lot of this PPE and masks that seems to be going on here. What'd you learn?
Well, I learned it's a big mess. So you have, you know, unprecedented demand and very little supply. And these networks of intermediaries, these brokers have sort of come out of the woodwork. And, you know, they're cutting deals, you know, saying things like, well, I can get you the masks. I'll take 5 to 10 cents a mask. And you have the end buyer being a government agency. You have the contractor they hired. But that contractor is sort of weeding through all of these intermediaries who are making big promises, folks who, you know, say they have somebody who has masks or they have a connection in China. And in the end, for our contractor in this story, navigating that just proved too much. And, you know, his deal fell through.
Yeah, it's all knowing a guy who knows a guy is what I thought of when I read this story. Can we talk for a second about the markups and the price point here? 3M, I think you say in this piece, they charge like $1.27 a mask, and yet Stewart, I think, or certainly some of the people you talk to in the story, are seeing prices of $5 and $6 per mask, which seems excessive.
Right, right. Well, so a couple things are happening. One is you have these brokers who are taking a piece off of every transaction. They're trying to make a profit. And you have a desperate government agency, the VA, that when they awarded this contract, they agreed to pay something like $5.75 a mask. So whether or not that's what they're going for, that just became the market, right? And people who are selling to our contractor are aware of what, you know, the end cost is going to be. So it's hard to tell what's really hiking up the prices. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely clear that people are making money before, you know, the government can get their hands on them.
So what do you make of this story, David? I mean, you were on the inside. What's your gut? Are we going to figure this out, or is this just going to be the way it is for the duration of this pandemic?
Well, you know, I was talking to a former FEMA director about the supply chain issues here, and I think we're going to see some of that ease up. You know, 3M, for instance, has ramped up production. Their sort of traditional distributors are getting some of these things out. But the desperation remains, and the truth is it's just kind of a wild west. You know, there isn't an explicit federal anti-gouging law that would prevent some of this behavior, and there's still money to be made.
David McSwain at ProPublica, it's an absolutely crazy story about his trip to Chicago with this guy who was going to do a mask deal. David, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today from the Associated Press, a report that Major League Baseball owners have approved a plan yet to be presented to the Players Union, it should be said, but the owners want the season to start around the 4th of July, no fans at all in the stands. We'll see how the players feel about it. But, and here's a real sticking point in my mind, honestly, part of the proposal would expand the designated hitter rule to the National League this year. Quoting Kevin Costner in the movie Bull Durham, I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. Don't at me. All right, here is your moment of economic context for this Monday. We started with Mary Ellen, consumers not really feeling the whole demand thing. Here's why, aside from getting sick, of course. Data from the New York Fed out today shows those consumers see their chances of losing their jobs to be the highest in 7 years and their expectations about earnings and spending to be the lowest in 7 years. Context as we like to say around here, matters. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Andy Corbin, Ali Pham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Bennett Purser. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.